Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel, commenting on the Russian autumn offensive. Well, autumn is well and truly over. We're definitely into winter. And the Russian autumn offensive has failed because we've got all the way through the autumn and they haven't achieved their goals. Now, they have made some ground, but nowhere near enough to justify the very high losses that they've been suffering. Ukrainian state media puts out the lie that Russia is suffering over 2,000 deaths some days, 2,200 deaths the other day. But what's their evidence for that? No doubt that Ukraine has inflicted some heavy strokes of war on the Russians, but that death toll is probably inflated by a factor of three, maybe even four. If it was 2,200 casualties, as in killed, wounded, and captured, that I could believe, but not deaths, because you have to assume for every one dead, there are two or three wounded. Some of the wounded will subsequently die, and the Russian medical services in their armed forces are just overwhelmed. Frankly, they don't care sometimes when it's the prison recruits and so on, although they've largely run out of them. They think they're just runts, elderly, or just so psychotic they can't be turned into proper soldiers, malnourished, whatever. Throw them forward into meat attacks. Some method to their madness. It's not just sheer callousness. It's a diversion. So it's a decoy when the main attack is coming from another direction a few minutes later, or counting their guns, you know, where the enemy position, how strong is their firepower, things like that. They can winkle them out. We can see where they're hiding their nests are or whatever. But they don't have that many people that they think they can throw away now. Partly Putin is trying to demonstrate that he's got so many troops he can afford to squander them. But can he really, how much longer to keep on going like this? Now, the Ukrainians have held Pokrovsk, which I didn't think they would do. I thought it would they would lose it by the end of October. So here we are like 7 weeks later and they're still holding it. I still believe they are going to be squeezed out, but they've managed to hang on longer than I, or so far as I know, anyone thought possible. Like Avdiivka or various other battles where the Ukrainians have proved to be very resilient and they were so tenacious. Their tenacity really is astonishing. But the Ukrainians also ask, is it worth it? Should they pull out some point? Is discretion the better part of valor? Because they've got to conserve their forces. Their armed forces are severely depleted. Just reading today how they're taking some troops from air defense units who are highly trained and specialized and putting them to frontline units to man trenches, which is less skilled. And obviously air defense is vital to this because one of the few areas where Russia can do quite well is pummeling Ukraine with drones, with missiles, rockets, and so forth, often hitting civilian targets, taking out much of their electric grid. And yes, Ukrainians are suffering badly, but it's not breaking their morale. The Russians are not trying as hard as they once did. It's still fairly hard because, you know, if it hasn't worked in the third winter, it's not going to work. So might be time to just give up. They're increasingly connected to the European electric grid. But that on its own is not enough. There are lots of electric substations they can take out. Russia can still make it expensive for European Union countries, which is supplying them with electricity like Romania and so on, kill some of their electrical engineers. And there are only so many of those. So, because Ukraine refuses to conscript men below the age of 25. It's ludicrous. There's an 18-year-old, he's waving bye-bye to granddad, who's 59, who's going off to the front line. Now, who's more physically fit? There's no contest. A 60-year-old man is often not in great condition. So some people, even though they're in very poor shape, are sent to the front line. And the blindingly obvious solution is to conscript the under 25s, in which case there would be no manpower problem. To get Ukrainians to come back from abroad, and they've appealed for that. And I know some Ukrainian construction workers in London who are not going back. Okay, I can hardly blame them. But Russia has suffered these very heavy casualties and they haven't achieved that breakthrough. Now, they may yet achieve the breakthrough, but so far it has failed. And they are going to take Pokrovsk. And, you know, I think by the end of January. But, you know, the Ukrainians, they may exceed expectations yet again. But Russia cannot go on suffering such losses indefinitely. Now, Russia, its progress has slowed down. There were times this autumn when they were moving forward a few hundred meters a day. Now it's more like tens of meters a day. The Ukrainians are adept at targeting their supply lines, their arms dumps and so on. There's the deep battle. We saw that Russian general killed in Moscow the other day. That's 1,000 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. Now, in an army of over a million troops, one general doesn't make that much difference, but it does have some effect on the top brass. You know, they're not safe even at home. You look at Hamas, and I know it's not an army widely regarded as a terrorist organization, and Israel killed 8 of the top 9 leaders of Hamas, and Hamas is now paralytic. So even though Hamas got tens of thousands of militants, or terrorists, as many would say, but below that, if you take out the head, it can't really function. People get overpromoted, people decline their promotion, they don't want to put their neck in the noose, and the same may happen with the Russian generals. Remember, Ukraine had a policy early in the war of using their snipers to kill Russian generals, and quite successful, because the generals had to be grown over decades. It takes a lot of training, a lot of experience, a lot of time at staff college, and then people who promoted too quickly without the requisite experience, without enough respect from their comrades, are more likely to get it wrong. So the Ukrainians may yet break, but that's some months off. Partly Russia wants to get as far west as they can, because there may well be negotiations in January. Remember, Trump's going to be inaugurated on the 20th of January. Putin's already said he's willing to speak to Zelensky, trying to lay the blame on Zelensky. Zelensky's saying he is willing to negotiate with Russia, accepting that he's not going to get all the territory back, at least in the short term. Doesn't mean there'll be any de jure acceptance of Russia's illegal occupation. Might be have to be a de facto one, and so on. Both keen to appear reasonable, but be in a relatively strong position from which to negotiate. The Russians hope that they could achieve a breakthrough before Trump comes in. The Ukrainians really not wanting that to happen. The Trump see that Ukraine is very much in the game, that it is worth arming them, and so on. The only thing is Ukrainian morale or fighting spirit has been diminished, because they think, well, there's only like 3 weeks to go, and what a pity it would be to be killed when the war is almost over. They're not sure it's almost over. But they need, I mean, I would sort of tax people who are not fighting, whether they got an exemption or not. Say, well, maybe I should fight after all. But all the money in the world isn't worth anything if you get killed. Now, even if you don't get killed, you can be wounded, permanently disabled, be a quadruple amputee or something. Not very attractive. For all these losses, it's just not been commensurate with the gains the Russians have made. But when does retreat turn into rout? At some point, the Ukrainians are going to say, we're going to have to pull out of Pokrovsk and go further back just to conserve our forces to some better prepared line of defense. And that's something they don't appear to be doing, building their answer to the Soyevikin line. This may yet be a frozen conflict. One of the better ideas to come out of this is various of Ukrainian allies, if there is a ceasefire, a truce, or a peace treaty, to send troops in to hold the front line, partly giving the Ukrainians a break. But then Russia knows if they attack again, they're going to bump into NATO troops. Now, okay, it wouldn't be NATO under the auspices of NATO. There are 30 NATO member states. Turkey would not join this. Slovakia and Hungary very likely would not join this. Maybe a few others wouldn't join it. The United States may well not join it. And some people in the British Armed Forces are saying, well, if the United States is not in, we're not in. But, you know, that would still leave up to 26 NATO countries, some non-NATO countries like Australia, where it'd send troops. Unlikely that Japan or South Korea would do. But anyway, tens of thousands of soldiers, maybe not that huge number, considering what Russia's up against. Now, Russia might then try gray zone warfare, deniable attacks, firing occasionally, sending for so-called volunteers of the Luhansk People's Republic, claiming they're not the Russian army, and see how NATO reacts. Does NATO fight back or not? Or NATO individual countries, not NATO as such, to test their resolve. But then people think, well, should we actually send troops from NATO countries? Because that could be the Third World War. But other countries might say, this is not a NATO mission. We're not coming to your aid. You're on your own. But I think that's the only way to have long-term security for Ukraine. Right. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.